This is the Future Great City podcast from nextstl.com. I'm Alex Enan. Today, we're talking to Ralph Fimmer, Executive Director of TrailNet, a nonprofit organization leading the effort to build healthy, vibrant communities where walking, biking, and transit are a way of life. All right, well, welcome, Ralph. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, glad to be here.
Yeah, well, we're going to cover a number of topics, but I guess to start with, let's set the stage with kind of who you are. You're in charge of TrailNet. If people want to look it up, as you're listening to this, it's trailnet.org. And you can read about it. But tell us what TrailNet is and a little bit of the history, kind of how it got started and where we are today with it.
Well, great. I guess I'll answer the first question first, is that who's Ralph Fimmer and why, you know, what is TrailNet Next?
Sure.
You know, I was a businessman. I was in business for a lot of years. I had a hospitality company that did programs for dining services with higher education and senior living, and I was an employer of a lot of service workers. And so we'll come back to that in a minute, but I sold that business in 2012 and was on the board of TrailNet, which was an active living advocacy that was very centered on bicycles, moving people around on bicycles.
And you got involved just because you're a cyclist?
I was a cyclist, yeah. I was competitive for a lot of years, off-road and on-road, cyclocross, and I did that for many years. And as a part of my business, I would promote events that were centered on active living, getting families and people together, competing for the different things that occur in these races. And then as a result, I would promote my restaurant, which was out in West St. Louis County, called the Wolf Public House.
Okay.
So it was a whole big social media audience building thing. And as a result of that, I looked to nonprofits that were doing good work, specifically in biking and walking and different things that were enhancing the community. So I would fund these organizations, and TrailNet was one of them. And I would provide the catering services for the 100-mile bike rides that they would do.
Gotcha.
And is a large part of that. So eventually became on the board and got sucked into, you know, what is TrailNet? And when Ann Mack, my predecessor, stepped down, who's also my friend, who was always, you know, hey, Ralph, can you help us out? I had planned on taking some time off, but I didn't. I went straight into it, took over as executive director, and now I'm the executive director of TrailNet.
And TrailNet's been around for, I guess, almost 30 years, I guess, since
27. We're in our 27th year.
Late 1980s, and it came about, if I'm correct, because there was an organization needed to promote the Riverfront Trail, which led up to the Chain of Rocks Bridge, which was kind of the longest, maybe most significant bicycle infrastructure project in the city at that time, outside of kind of the Forest Park and kind of the big park system.
Right.
And then it kind of grew out of that, correct? Just trying to connect different areas and promote cycling.
Well, it started a long time. Okay, so go back 27 years. It started as a bicycle fun club, Tom Yarborough, and a group of, they must be in their 70s and 80s now, got together and rode bikes and created this culture of like-minded enthusiasts that would then, you know, learn to navigate the streets of St. Louis, and it grew and grew and grew. It was a culture. It was primarily 50-plus white, pale male guys,
right.
And in a large part, that's kind of how we're still considered. And I'm trying to get that changed. But we started with the Grants Trail. Then we got into building trails. We were trail builders. We did what the Great Rivers Greenway does today.
So in a way, I mean, Great Rivers Greenway Great Rivers Greenway is a separate organization, obviously, that's funded by tax revenue in several counties, in St. Charles County, St. Louis County, and St. Louis City, I believe. And so in a way, not that it grew out of TrailNet, but it kind of came out of that same culture than to build a bigger project, right? And that was founded, I mean, that organization was created from a ballot initiative, I guess.
It was, and I'm not really sure of, you know, how it all. I just met with somebody in Illinois that had all the lineage of the whole thing. And as a result of, you know, our work, we're a nonprofit. We would do the easements and buy the land, and we created the Grants Trail, and it was a highly successful project that later got leased to the St. Louis County, and Great Rivers Greenway came in after they got situated, after the tax. We decided to tax ourselves as a community, and they were to go and build what they call the river ring, the Great River Ring,
which
is a connected, dedicated bikeway.
This hints at my ongoing confusion after 11 years in St. Louis of all the different jurisdictions and all the different advocacy groups, and it's not that there are dozens of them, but there's not a there's one group, you know, with Great Rivers Greenway doing trails and this Great River Ring where you can ride from, I don't know, you know, the east side all the way to St. Charles or something if you want to on connected trails. But they don't do advocacy work, right? So it's kind of a...
Well, there's a lot of cannibalization. Okay. Right. TrailNet handed over the reins of trail building, dedicated trails that, mm-hmm. that usually, if there were rails to trails conversions or purchasing land that was already activated, getting the easements and building these dedicated trails. That's what we used to do. That's right. what Great Rivers Greenway does today. Right. During that transition, and then in the midst of that, TrailNet trying to figure out what we're going to be. We also did the Riverfront Trail and got that off the ground. Once that transferred and those assets transferred over to Great Rivers Greenway, then they created their plan and their master plan and their strategy to do so, mm-hmm. which was this marketing plan that says, here's the Great River Ring, and here's where it's going to be, right. and here's how it's going to be connected. And, you know, the question is it connected?
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, not yet, but, you know.
Not yet, not yet.
So looking at, you know, the TrailNet website, what you find is a mission statement that reads, and I hope I get this right, fostering healthy, active, and vibrant communities where walking, bicycling, and use of public transit are a way of life.
Right.
So that's a significant transition from way back to building trails and things like that. And probably not, I would imagine if you asked people who are listening to this and who read Next STL, that's not the mission statement they would come up with for TrailNet. So talk about that. I mean, you alluded to it, kind of this transition of mission and you know, re-promoting or repositioning the organization in a way.
Right. And, you know, the organization has evolved. Mm-hmm. The mission hasn't changed. We want to lead in fostering, in a nutshell, an active living lifestyle in community. And that's where walking and biking is everyday life. So you look at the region and you see some of the inequities. You see, you know, West St. Louis County, St. Charles County, you know, the suburbanization that's occurred there and the highway and the transportation system having fed that flight. Mm-hmm. Then you have, you know, all the leakage that occurred within the city. And then you say, well, what happened to all this? And what was the real cause? Well, it was the transportation plan. And which was it a plan? No, it kind of evolved too, right. as people started grabbing at the dollars that were available to us. So as a result of that, we look at the urban core and the built environment, and try to say, well, how can we make it better? And what does it mean if we have transportation, and how does it connect to the safe routes for walking and biking? And then we look at the safety issues, and we do all that through part of what we do, which is our planning department. And, you know, we have planners on staff, and we do planning and bike plans throughout the metropolitan area. And
right. So now you do programming, which people I think are probably most aware of, because that's the public part. So the ride to work day and group rides on weekends and things like that. Right.
Right.
But then there is planning and policy. And let's hit on planning for a second, because I think when I was first first impressed by TrailNet was when I learned that you'd taken, I think, a group of aldermen to a planning conference, I think, in Chattanooga. Maybe it was at the time, the Livable Communities Conference.
Right.
And I heard directly from those aldermen that it really opened their eyes. And it's one thing to talk about it and say, you know, St. Louis should have bike lanes or St. Louis should be walkable. But until people are exposed to it or understand what that really means, nothing happens. So I, that was the point where I was like, yes, like do more of that, you know, like and get people exposed to these ideas.
You know, that is the it. Okay, so let's define it. So Chattanooga, who would ever thought that Chattanooga was going to be highlighted as a place that's going to represent and characterize livability, and livability being, you know, well, it's a sense of place. It's a sense mm-hmm. of the right type of transportation and everything that goes along with the empowerment.
And it's the result of choices you make, right? It's not. There's nothing inherent, which I think we feel in St. Louis a lot of times, like, well, we're just kind of the way it is, you know? I mean, we don't know how we got here, but there weren't other alternatives, and we're just kind of how we are.
Yeah, the only solution is to point out what's wrong with it, and that's where the conversation ends.
Right.
And, you know, there has to be an organization that says, hey, it's definitely not good enough for TrailNet to say, hey, this everything sucks over here. That's bad. This
is
bad.
That's what we do on Next STL. You can you're the solution people. We're gonna point out what's wrong and then you can fix it, right?
We try to do. And
not to do that too much.
And you don't really do that. And I think you're serving a good space. You know, we're not necessarily, moving forward, we're very careful. We can't look at St. Louis and say, look at the built environment, look at the division, and look at all, you know, mm-hmm. the lack of equity that's present in our community, and say, hey, we won't serve anybody if we're just going to be the whistleblower on all the things that occur. What we try to do is educate the community on, hey, this is the way we are now, and here's a peer city like Chattanooga, for example. Mm-hmm. Or Nashville, Tennessee, or Indianapolis, for crying out loud. Have you been in Indianapolis lately at the cultural
I'm a
trip?
Hoosier, you know, with a capital H.
That's
so
right.
I, uh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm one from St. Luger. But my point is that our peer cities have peer organizations like ours mm-hmm. that have been the catalyst and kind of been the information gatherer that, you know, that helps inspire the community. And we do that through lots of bike rides, lots of public engagement. We do a lot of program work with the Missouri Foundation for Health, the HEAL Partnership. Mm-hmm. We try to do demonstrations for traffic calming. We try to give people an idea of what does it look like? Because the real issue here in St. Louis is that we have got to better attract and retain the talent that's here. You know, as in, and I'm from the business sector, so I lean towards the St. Louis being able to pay for itself. Right. And the city, with all the leakage that's occurred here, how are we going to better leverage what is important to the people that come here to go to school and may want to consider bringing their businesses back here? There's a lot of improvement going on in that area, Cortex, Central Corridor, and everything that's mm-hmm. going on there. There's lots of improvement, but we have a lot of work to do. As a result of where our mission has been, centered on active living and bikeability and walkability, you know, we look at, well, that's a healthy community, and livability is a healthy community.
So bringing examples of that to our political leaders are kind of, a role that no one else is doing.
Right. It's been a very solid success factor for mm-hmm. TrailNet. We have the attention of our political leaders, and we have political capital, as we call it. We put a lot into those relationships, and we don't necessarily, they don't necessarily want us being the ones to just point and be the whistleblower.
Right.
They count on us for these solutions, because here's why, and here's where TrailNet, and here's where everybody can help us, is that mm-hmm. If you're a member of TrailNet, you basically have a voice, and if you're a constituent of TrailNet, which may not be a member, maybe you're on the fence and you don't exactly know what it is we do, but the politicians listen to us, and to be quite honest with you, as a group of people that have influence that want to carve out the way that our city may be someday, we're the ones that get the message to the politicians. We're the ones that write the policy, Complete Streets, for example. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that want to submit the new measurements that are going to take place in order to ensure that we're getting movement forward. And that's kind of what policy is right. for TrailNet.
Right. Okay, so we talk about retention of jobs, and some of that tends to steer towards, highly educated people with often expensive bikes and expensive clothing and things like that, right? And so, and I think that's a misperception, but certainly one that's prevalent in St. Louis. But you also touched on kind of the social equity, and we can't just point to that, but obviously that's an issue that's significant in St. Louis and was significant before events in Ferguson last year. And what's amazing is we've done a few of these podcasts, and no matter what we're talking about, we touch on, it always comes back to something happening in Ferguson and
right.
and the result of the protests and the result of law changes afterwards and this kind of thing. So it's amazing how this centers on some of these events, but it really revealed or made more apparent, maybe brought more attention to the parts of our community that aren't healthy. And one of the things I try to do is say, don't build a bike lane for me. I mean, I used to race and, Ralph, you race and we like bike lanes and things like that, but we'll ride anyway, probably. But as I ride around St. Louis, you see people who are using bikes, not as an option because it's fun or exercise feels good. It's their only mode of transportation. And this is no more obvious than certainly on the north side of the city. And you go there, and I think it's, I don't know what the number is, it's 25 or 29% of the population up there doesn't have access to a car. Not that they own a car. No one in their home owns a car. I mean, they have to use bicycles. And that's probably where the infrastructure is the worst in a lot of ways. So it'd be nice. I mean, my dream is to have a city where cycling is an option for people. And it's not one of these things, you get into this the war on cars and junk like this that people throw about. And it's not about that. And I don't see that from TrailNet either, but it's just about if people just had the option to ride, a safe option to get on a bike if they, if they didn't want to own a car or couldn't afford to own a car.
Well, it's key. I mean, I'm in the midst of reading the Forward Ferguson Commission report that just mm-hmm. went out. And it's actually, by the way, it's written very well. It's written for the person that can understand it. It's just not all the legalese and all these.
Right.
It's written very well. It obviously talks about equity being a huge issue in our community and access. And, it's a law that everything's supposed to be legal, but it just isn't the way that it is in St. Louis. So having access to transportation alternatives, having transit systems with a bold plan. One of the things in St. Louis is we don't have a bold plan for transportation.
Right. We don't seem to have a comprehensive plan for very much at all. I mean, it's kind of...
We should have a transportation plan, and it mm-hmm. really kind of exists, but then we get into funding and then the one-outs
right.
and the knee-jerk reactions to the issues that come up that then drive the lack of what could be a comprehensive, bold vision for the entire region. And that is one of St. Louis's biggest problems. So getting people access is going to, we have to look at it pretty high up and say, well, what's really going to be the plan that affects most? And then we all come together in order to make it happen. Yes, it needs to be safe, first of all, for these riders to get the access to the connection points with the buses and to the connection points with transit. We have one of the worst ratings for safety in the city. Or in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a designated city that
right,
is...
for cyclists and pedestrians, right? I mean, the number of pedestrian deaths is like double this year, I think, even from last year. I mean, it's a...
And getting worse. And that's a result of the resources that we have in order to provide better safety. So we're heavily encouraging the city of St. Louis to adopt the Vision Zero plan.
Right, which is Vision Zero is zero pedestrian deaths, correct?
Right.
That's something that is very much in the center of the conversation in a place like New York, where there are dozens and dozens of deaths and probably more pedestrian and car conflict than in a place like St. Louis in a way. But
the concept came from Europe. It came over here. Mm-hmm. Cities, you know, that have to embrace the fact that every crash can be avoided if you zero in on the problem and you can make it happen.
And so too often it's kind of like, well, it's, you know, people here think it's driver education. You know, it's like, well, let's just remind everyone that they should look out for bikes. Or let's remind all pedestrians they should use crosswalks. And, you know, it's like that seems to, I think we've reached our education limit. You know, if people don't understand that part now, if people don't understand to wear a seatbelt,
silver bullet. It's a whole lot of different things, and you know that's the type of communication and the work that we do. We try to get it out there. We get it done creatively. Yeah. You know what's very interesting in St. Louis, especially in the city of St. Louis, is that there has been a 270% increase in commuter riders since 2000. Between 2000 and 2014, 270% increase in the amount of people that use active transportation, meaning they're riding their bicycles to and from work.
And that's at a time where the population is decreasing still kind of rapidly. I mean, so that's not a product of like, oh, the city's booming and all of a sudden there's more cyclists here.
Well, it provides a little bit of optimism, and I'll tell you what it is. Okay, so that's the top 5% in the country. We've had the biggest gain in commuters. The top 5% in the country is for the biggest gains. So what that means is that young people are looking at St. Louis and saying, you know, well, this is a community that's getting better. You know, we're not at the bottom of the pile in walking and biking and access. We'll stay with transportation right now. We're not at the bottom of the pile. We're about, we're at the bottom of the best and in the top of the worst. If you were to rank it through the American,
that might be St. Louis's new slogan right there.
Yeah.
You may have hit on something right there.
Well, it's perpetual, and the only reason it's perpetual is because we don't have a bold vision for the transportation.
But this gets to something, obviously the bigger issue, which again we come to it on every podcast, is the political situation in St. Louis, just all the different municipalities and the different jurisdictions and that kind of thing, the fractured political structure. How does TrailNet operate in that? So, and this is an opportunity too to talk about the effort that you're working on in De Pere. So De Pere, it was low hanging fruit, but we took the opportunity to make fun of that process because there's a plan for new sidewalks and some trail access, and you had some residents saying, you know, they felt like they were going to be invaded by people on bicycles and roller blades or something. So I had this vision of like, you know, barbarians riding bicycles and getting to the end of a trail that they were, you know, they were getting ready to invade De Pere, but the trail ended and they just kind of went, well, I guess we have to go home. Well, you know, there's no bike trail. How are we going to get there?
Fear is lack of education. I think, you know,
but these jurisdictions, like you run into a De Pere and there's no, the county isn't driving that plan. I mean, you were invited in to do the plan, but then it's up to De Pere. So they look at it and the residents decide they want it or they don't want it, and then you move on to another jurisdiction, I guess.
So, well, yeah, we do. And, our goal is, you know, as a consultant on that matter, which was the case in that, you know, is to help the people write the plan for themselves. Okay, we don't... Here's the plan, and this is the way it's got to be. That's not what it's about.
But you come with examples and knowledge of other places and
peer organizations,
how it works
peer cities, best practices. Our planning department is very well educated from Europe and all over the United States. So it's the best case scenario, progressive, forward vision, with a lot of resource behind it. But bottom line, the community is going to want what the community wants, and we're there to help usher that through. So Kirkwood, for example, we had a very successful bike plan there, and this was kind of an extension of that because there's a vision to connect the Grants Trail up as far where you have bike and livability, active transportation all the way through that corridor. And Kirkwood, we presented a plan. Actually, it starts with a survey usually. A community will say, let's do a survey. Let's figure out what everybody wants in here. And the survey comes back and says, well, we want better walking and biking.
Right.
It doesn't mean that people aren't going to be concerned about what that means. So we help them get through that.
That's the question that isn't on there is that is revealing is a lot of times if you talk to people, they want to drive to their walkable community. They want to drive to – I've heard that people complain that they would use Grants Trail more, but there's no place to park. Just like, crap.
Yeah,
it's like
it's a mindset.
Then you back up and you're like, so they built the Great Trail. How do you get to it? And you start to get into these connectivity issues that are difficult, especially in Kirkwood or De Pere, where it's a suburban environment to a large extent.
It is, but it's also, it's becoming more and more progressive as we graduate and get people to live here and we attract and retain our talent.
Right. Well, just there's generational turnover. So in some of these communities, I mean, this is the great part of St. Louis and also a challenge is that you have. An entire generation doesn't leave a subdivision or a neighborhood. And so you end up having, as people retire and kids have long gone and they move out of their homes. Yeah, you have young people move in and now we've got these, the strollers I have are like Humvees, And like, so I want this great big wide path for my Humvee stroller and this kind of stuff. So yeah, so the demands change, right? And people are looking for a different type of experience.
They do. And in a forward thinking community that really has to set the pace for what's going to occur 25 years from now, we can talk about suburbia and say, what's going to happen with suburbia 25 years from now when all these, the facilities that we're building now won't be able to support themselves through the amount of money that's going to cost to maintain them. That's a whole nother conversation. I'd be glad to come back.
We'll bring you back.
If you ever get into strong towns and you get into that, you'll find that the suburbia really has some heavy duty decisions to make as it relates to the transportation systems that they have. Mm-hmm. The interior, you're just on the inside of 270 right there, and there are some progressive-minded people who are saying, hey, we do need to make sure that we're embracing this because the next generation of people are going to require it and live here.
I always thought, reading about, especially De Pere, but other places, if nothing else, even if you don't want to walk, even if you don't like people riding a bike past your house, you're going to want to sell your house at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if nothing else, just start thinking about how what's going to help in terms of marketing your home and create value in your community, if you want to be selfish about
everything it. Everything is data-driven, okay? So nothing that we do that we provide in the context or the perspective that we provided in isn't data driven. So if data provides the fact that a bike lane behind your house increases your value, then that's what we would present to the community.
I feel like that's the magic bullet in St. Louis. Tell everyone their home value will go up with a trail in front of their house, and you're gonna see trails left and right and everywhere.
But yeah.
So let's get back to the city because that's where I think there's certainly the biggest. Opportunity to create a walk. I mean, it was built as a walking city. It was mainly built out before cars existed. So we have this infrastructure here, and we have a street grid and things like that. What's happening in the city? Maybe we'll start talking about the traffic calming exercise that just wrapped up. I think there were three different demonstrations, and talk about what those were, and maybe the impact or the reaction from those.
Well, there's four. There's four, okay. And they were funded through a grant that we had that was very important. to the work that we're doing. So it basically creates a scenario. It was designed to provide, to get the community involved and say, hey, we've got an area. And most of these were right outside of an elementary school or a middle school.
Yeah. And these are like one or two or three block areas.
Right.
Small, one or two, three, small demonstrations.
That met the demand for calming. And so where there's a high level of people speeding, disregard for the stop signs, crosswalks, different things like that, it is a real issue in St. Louis. The safety that we have for our children. If we want kids to ride bikes, we'd like to have them.
People aren't from here, people who are here may not know this, but speed bumps are actually illegal apparently in the city of St. Louis currently. I mean, this is an old fight that people have had in the city, but there are no speed bumps in the city of St. Louis.
So. Speed humps, we call them. And the I can't answer that. My planning department probably could, but I can. So these demonstrations we call them pop up demonstrations where we use temporary obstacles and place them in a way where it creates confusion. Mm-hmm. Confusion then gets the attention of the driver. They slow down. They're looking as to what may occur, and it solves the problem of that. And it goes over extremely well. In fact, our all of the materials that we had from that are now stored in our warehouse. And
these are painted tires and cones and plants, signs
that we bought. And it's significant. In the last one we did in Jeff Vanderloo area was four blocks wide, and it, it was, it really created a buzz in the community. And the mayor came out, and Jamie Wilson, the new bike ped coordinator, and Dina Vinker from Streets. It's a resource that now we're going to have and lend it out to new community or to communities as like a lending library where they can go and set these things up themselves. So it was very impactful.
We're it was great. I happened to ride up there that morning. I think there was a press conference or something that morning, and I thought I'll swing by there on my ride to work. And I just happened to stop, and there were some residents sitting on the porch, and they were kind of like, what the heck's going on? Why are there painted tires on my street? And I talked to them for 5 or 10 minutes, and like, oh yeah, hey, that's great. Like, cars go 50 miles an hour down this street. And it's like, this is just a plain old residential city street. I mean,
What's profound is
and next to a school, as you say. So
what's profound is that there is a real sense of community in these communities we're in. These are some of them are stressed and distressed communities, and but yet they have what
right. There's vacancy and some empty buildings and empty lots and things like that. Sometimes.
Very wide roads. Mm-hmm. The real estate that we own in the road system in the city of St. Louis is an incredible, and it's something that we think that can be leveraged a lot better than it is now.
So how does it work in the city? We've talked about this before, but in terms of the budget for streets, like so you do traffic calming, everyone shows up and the mayor's there and the streets department head is there and they say, this is awesome. Wouldn't it be great to do this here and down there and over there and over here? How does that happen? How is it currently set up in terms of funding street improvements in the city? And then what do you think is possible going forward?
Right. So the bulldozers and the cement doesn't just show up in the design. It's
and you guys don't own that equipment.
No, we don't. And nor do we have the money to do it. And neither does the city of St. Louis, to be quite honest with you. It's drastically underfunded. It's funded in part by the 1% earnings tax that then goes into an $8.5 million budget for streets that then gets divided into 28 different ways into the automatic accounts that then upon need gets alerted to the streets department. The streets department does the work and then they're billed into those accounts for these repairs. It's a 19th century process and just not good enough. And so that's at the root of a lot of the problems that we have in St. Louis. And it's, again,
so you have a city that's 60 square miles divided into 28 areas that all do their own, in a sense, their own street planning. I mean, I've seen this money go to, it'll repave an alley 1 year. And then, the next year it'll, fix a sidewalk or something. I mean, it's really
or
just
a sign or dumpsters or there's other things that are included
that
are needed. And ask the
These are all basic services that are necessary.
But. Right. So it's an anecdote. I mean, I don't know. This is one of the things that when you realize that this is the way it is and you're not that familiar with the industry, you go, whoa, it really is tough for the street department to do that. So we're very centered on looking for ways to how can we fund our street department because that's the biggest challenge. We have all this real estate that could be converted into a safer system for biking and walking, but it needs to be funded. The bond issue did not pass in August.
Right. The major bond issue is to replace fire trucks, replace dump trucks, do all kinds of things kind of those basic services.
Right. And fund in part the streets. Mm-hmm. And so, it really boils down to where's the bold vision, and where is the collective impact strategy of the community that says, hey, in order to do this, we have to have a plan. So I'm suggesting that is what TrailNet is growing up to be.
Right.
We're suggesting that we want to position ourselves as a change leader in the community, that with our platform of active living and livability and our political capital and the places we get, we kind of want to present and encourage a bold vision and create this table so we can get in front of this. We've got some really cool stuff going on in St. Louis right now, and the private sector is dropping money into these things. Mm-hmm. And
has to be a structure to drop money into something productive, I guess.
It needs to make sense.
Ready to go.
Yeah, and thank everyone for any big dollar amount. The Arch Riverfront, that's going to be a wonderful asset to have. Forest Park. What would we be without that? The new stadium, should we go there?
Maybe that's another
time. If it goes, it needs to be embraced into the overall plan that includes bold vision. Yeah. And we just don't have bold vision.
When you see these organizations, I mean, this takes decades, but, Forest Park is now just finished, I think, a connectivity plan. So because part of the issue is, once you get inside the park, there's this great loop you can ride and things, but if you're a rider that's just passing through the park or you're trying to get to the park from a surrounding neighborhood, it's a pretty terrible experience in a lot of cases. And you know, slowly that's being improved. The intersection on the southwest corner of the park was just, I think, you know, $200,000-$300,000 in ward money from Alderman Ogilvie and Alderwoman Crewson. You know, they decided to put their own ward money, which could have been spent, you know, on all kinds of different things, into improving that intersection, which is obviously a benefit for the whole region, which is kind of a symptom of the problem. I mean, it's an example of great cooperation and a great improvement and a great amenity, but also highlighting how weird and backwards our planning process is.
Well, I mean, it's tactical. It's wonderful. Sure. And what would life be like without those two, you know, driving progressive change in these things? And we're very fortunate to have them because they are change leaders.
I do want to highlight is that the city of St. Louis and the streets department, as I've seen over the years, is very amenable to new ideas. It is a funding issue. And so you had issues like maybe the best example is South Grand, where they narrowed the street to two traffic lanes. I think the streets department didn't like that idea, but the business district down there came to them first with a well-planned idea, second with money and got a grant, and then they went ahead and did it. So it seems like if an organization like Tranet can bring together policy and then maybe ideas for funding or actual money through grants or other projects, then, you know, the city's amenable. They're flexible to these types of things. They're just not able or equipped, you know, financially or by the staff to go out and do it in a proactive way.
Well, that's a really good example of how communities are saying, hey, you know what, we're going to do this because it's going to do two things. It's going to attract and retain the talent that we need. It's going to create a more healthy environment, safer for kids and children. It's going to connect.
Good for businesses.
It's going to stimulate the economic development of the area. And South Grand is one of several success stories in where the community came together, put together the money that they had, and then made it work. And it's phenomenal. And look at what's occurred there. Look at Rooster on a Sunday morning.
Right.
It's incredible.
Well, we're going to wrap this up, but one, let's cover two things very quickly because I think people might have questions about them. And you talked about the Gateway Bike Plan and then something called Bike St. Louis, which I think even if you search online, you're not going to find a lot of information about either one, but these are kind of bigger visions that have come and gone because they were collaborative efforts that, in my view, no one really owned it. And so there was grant money for several different things. So a nice brochure was made and then it kind of disappeared.
Well, you know, the Gateway Bike Plan is something that Great Rivers Greenway has put together. It's a collection of a plan for St. Charles County, St. Louis County, and St. Louis City. It's ongoing. They took responsibility for that as part of their ongoing charter to do the trail building. The Bike St. Louis plan is really something that the city should be doing. I mean, GRG, Great Rivers Greenway, stepped in to fill in the gap on this, and it's been going. We just finished up phase three, and you know, without that, without those funds being available in order to make that, we wouldn't be where we are today. And it resulted in, and you know, TrailNet, by the way, was a technical advisor to that. In other words, we can lead projects, we can lead on things,
right.
and the bike plan and our philosophy is maybe a little bit more progressive than GRG's, but GRG took the reins on this and created what they could that resulted in some protected bikeways. Moving into the end of phase three, we're looking at, well, what's next? Or is it really prudent for them and all the stuff that they got to do to continue on with that? It references the need for a bold transportation plan that includes what will happen next with biking and walking.
I think something we noticed, the example is the Chestnut Street, I believe, right downtown, the protected bike lane.
Yeah, pretty nice.
So that was great news. But if you look at the Bike St. Louis plan, that was not included in phase three plans that are available online or available for anyone. And it was kind of built and no one really knew about it. And I think I contacted TrailNet and other people and asked about it. And it was kind of like, we're an advisor. The city's doing that. And I called the city and they're like, we're going to have a press release in a week. And then it kind of opened and it was there. And there was no, I think it was a missed opportunity because cyclists didn't know it was coming. People were kind of stumbling upon it today. And
absolutely was. It was it's there. We got it in, you know, it's good. Right. And everybody's saying, we have more, protected bike lanes than Seattle. I don't know if it was you that published that.
No, that was the Seattle bike blog that came across. They actually, the TV station that was, I forget what station it was. They were doing a piece. They happened to bump into him. And so he was the guy who talked about the protected bike lane. Cause there was no one else available.
So what we ended up with, you know, we've got miles of protected bike lanes in St. Louis, and that's what we ended up with. Did it go perfect? Was the public engagement piece as good as TrailNet being the technical advisor on that? We were saying, hey, you need to do the public engagement piece. Make sure you get that. Maybe next time around, here's
just
our solution.
Tell people about it.
We just won't call it out, but here's our solution. Next time, we'll get involved. We'll do some public engagement. It costs money, so let's go find those funds in order to make this happen. We learned a lot from it. The whole city learned a lot from it. This is part of a team effort. But the process isn't good enough. That's what Trailhead is here for. We need to make it better. And you know, and
all right, so the last question we ask, this is called the Future Great City podcast. And so we always ask, you know, what does it take for St. Louis to be a future great city? And the interesting thing is, you know, that used to be, I think, and maybe too much still today, a great city is considered a city that's growing or booming in population or adding, you know, new corporations or something like that. And maybe it's time to reevaluate what that means in St. Louis. I'm interested to hear from you. What does it take for St. Louis to be a great city?
Well, first we have to watch what our peer cities are doing. Okay, this is, you know, if everything's already been invented, but the one thing we have is the potential to leverage the active living community, the livability in our community. Let's get our act together as it relates to connectivity. Maybe it's a network of protected bikeways that connects higher education to places of worship, to retail areas, to the neighborhoods that have all this cultural equity. It's the most amazing thing in St. Louis. Create a branded concept that then is marketed as part of a collective process to market externally our city as being a wonderful place to be. We have the assets, the Arch Riverfront, Forest Park, all of the cultural equity in the neighborhoods. My guess is that if we continue to work on that bold vision and create that, then we'll have a better branded concept than just the ball sport concept.
We're a great sports city.
We are.
There's a lot more happening.
Doesn't have to be everything.
All right. Well, Ralph, thanks for joining us. And again, everybody should check out trailnet.org and see what they're up to. Join events, consider being a member, and we'll leave it at that. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
This has been the Future Great City Podcast on nextstl.com. Thanks for joining us. Be informed, be engaged, be part of what's next. Nextstl.com.